This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, making inroads in the battle against lung cancer in Arkansas. After years of steady increases, the rate is dropping in the state.
Plus, shifts in how the testing for a GED certificate in Arkansas are conducted, and a closer listen to one of the bands scheduled to appear at the 2014 edition of Wakarusa.
First, discussion about the upcoming fiscal session and the 2015 budget begins today. The Legislative Council and Joint Budget Committee will hold 3 days of budget hearings before the start of the session on February 10th. Governor Mike Beebe's administration projected a $90 million increase in general revenue for the 2015 fiscal year that starts in July. Joint Budget Committee Co-Chair Representative Duncan Baird says the governor mentioned some specific areas that he wants to address.
One was public school funding, the other was the Department of Corrections and our inmate population. I think those were two specific areas that he has mentioned for using some of that additional revenue.
The legislature will also look into reauthorizing the use of federal Medicaid dollars for private health insurance options.
The outcome of a special election today for a Northeast Arkansas Senate seat could be a factor in the long-term viability of the state's Medicaid expansion. The race will determine whether Democrat Steve Rockwell or Republican John Cooper will serve the remainder of former State Senator Paul Bookout's term. Bookout, a Democrat, vacated the post due to ethics violations. Political analyst Jay Barth from Hendricks College says Bookout voted for the private option plan to expand Medicaid. That's a plan that will be under review by lawmakers during next month's fiscal session.
We know that there was not a vote to spare in terms of the Senate vote on the private option back in the regular session. So Governor Beebe and the leaders in the House and Senate who worked so hard on the private option are going to have to work really hard again to make it happen no matter what. And a loss for the Democrats in this race would ratchet up the pressure and make it more difficult. It doesn't make it impossible, but it certainly makes it more complicated.
Barth says it would be a risky move for lawmakers to take Medicaid coverage away.
We do know from past history that, you know, it's really hard to take away services from folks who have become used to getting them. And here we're not just talking about a handful of people who are getting the services, but we're talking, you know, tens of thousands of folks who now will, you know, enjoy this program for a period of months, and it's really hard to take that away.
Barth says lawmakers would not want to face a possible backlash for denying people health insurance coverage, and even if Democrats lose this election, he says it's highly unlikely the Medicaid expansion will be dismantled.
Arkansas candidate for Governor Asa Hutchinson yesterday offered the second policy initiative of his campaign. In Springdale, Hutchinson, who is vying for the Republican nomination, called for expanding computer science education by changing the law, allowing high school students to get a credit toward graduation through such a class, and making sure it's available in every high school in the state.
We have to educate our young people in the language of the workforce of the future, which is computer code. And when I talk about computer science, I'm not talking about the ability to do Microsoft Word or to keyboard. This is the ability to really write a foreign language, JavaScript. It's computer code that is the language of the workplace.
Hutchinson said it would help expand high-tech computer-related jobs in Arkansas. But the state Democratic Party argued in a statement that Hutchinson's record on education shows in the past he has worked to water down standards for public schools and voted against funding science education and reducing class sizes.
The Arkansas Department of Health is urging residents to get vaccinated for the flu after 15 people have died because of the flu virus so far this season. This year, H1N1 is the most prevalent type of flu. A strain that Carrie Krell with the health department says particularly affects adults between the ages of 25 and 50.
One of the reasons why we think is because generally people between the ages of 25 and 50 are fairly healthy. Unless they have a pre-existing medical condition, they usually don't have a high risk for flu-related complications. So what we're seeing is we're seeing more people in this age group get very sick, very fast, and have to go to the hospital because of flu.
Seven of the flu-related deaths to occur so far in Arkansas have occurred within that 25 to 50-year-old age demographic. Krell says aside from getting vaccinated, there are a couple of other precautions people can take to prevent the further spread of the virus.
One of the most important things you can do during flu season, besides getting the flu shot, is to practice really good hand hygiene. Wash your hands often. If you are going to be around someone who you know is sick, you know, try to avoid them as best you can. And if you do get sick, stay at home. Don't infect others.
Flu vaccines are available at pharmacies, doctor's offices, and local health department offices across the state. They are free for those who do not have health insurance.
The Fayetteville School District will be looking for a new superintendent. Vicki Thomas announced her resignation to the district's board last night. She says she is leaving June 30th at the end of her current contract to take care of an ailing relative in Texas. She's been the superintendent at Fayetteville School District since July of 2009.
Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 21 in northwest Arkansas, 27 for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny with highs from the lower to mid-40s tomorrow. And tomorrow night, a few clouds with lows between 25 and 28.
New beginnings. For the GED test, it means changes to the exam for the first time since 2002. Janice Hanlon, Arkansas GED administrator, says the exam is changing in light of Common Core standards being implemented in schools. She says over time, it will be a good change and the test will better reflect what people really need in order to succeed. The changes took effect this month, and one of the biggest differences is the test is now completely computerized. Instead of five parts, the test now has four. Hanlon says the reading and writing sections have been combined into one area called Reasoning Through Language Arts. There are also different types of questions on the exam, which previously mostly consisted of multiple choice.
On the new test, there will be different types of computer skills that will be needed. There will be drop-down boxes. There will be extended response where a person will need to be able to type in an answer, you know, of several paragraphs to analyze maybe a document or whatever and write to that or write to some particular topic. So they will need some keyboarding skills, although they say that even if you hunt and peck, you should be able to finish that. There will be fill-in-the-blank questions. There will be hot-spot questions where a person clicks on a spot on a chart, for instance. They might be, interpreting a chart, interpreting a political cartoon, that kind of thing. Multiple choice questions there will still be, and there will also be short answer questions.
The first GED test was created in 1942, and it's updated every 10 to 15 years. According to the GED Testing Service website, the exam takes a little more than 7 hours to complete, and it's administered year-round at testing centers worldwide. According to the website, people with a high school credential earn $568,000 more in a lifetime than people without a high school credential. The Arkansas GED testing program serves Arkansans 16 years or older who are not enrolled in or have not graduated from high school and who meet other state requirements regarding residency and testing eligibility. Hanlon says the new test has two designations for those who pass. There's the high school credential level and then the career college ready or honors level. The distinction is made based on a student's score. Hanlon says the new test has required much preparation, including equipping testing centers with computers.
So that's required a lot of work and in some cases a lot of purchases of computers and setting that up in the proper format. We've done lots of training with teachers through our Adult Learning Resource Center. Our teachers have come in and received training on the new test and on the Common Core curriculum. We've had to change some state law, those kinds of issues that, you know, are kind of behind-the-scenes issues. So we've had a tremendous amount of preparation to do to get ready for the new test. And there are still some unanswered questions and the processes that we're trying to analyze and figure out how exactly we're going to implement those. So it will be a learning process for all of us, not only here in the state office, but out in the field as well. But we have very, very good adult education centers, and we have lots of support. So we're really excited about it.
A law that had to be changed, Hanlon explains, is one that prevented them from charging more than $10 for the test. Previously, Arkansans did not have to pay to take the GED. Now, because the computerized version will cost more than the pencil and paper version, Hanlon expects people will be charged $16 to take the test, and the state will cover the rest. The test costs $120 from the national office, but Hanlon says $40 go back to the testing center as a channel compensation, so the test actually costs $80. Hanlon says it's a great return on investment because, on average, people with a high school diploma or a GED make $8,000 more a year than someone without those credentials. Higher salaries can mean more tax money for the state with minimal investment. Another change to the exam is the way it's graded. For about 10 years, Hanlon says because it was more cost-effective, tests were sent to the University of Texas Scoring Center in Austin. She says her office then uploaded those scores and printed diplomas and transcripts. Now a computer will be able to grade the test that day. The computers are even programmed to grade the extended response questions.
To me, it's magic, but they call it artificial intelligence. And the way that I understand it is that they will have a topic that that person is supposed to write on, and they gather information about that topic and determine if they have addressed that topic, and it's all done through computer and through that artificial intelligence. So certain phrases, if they're used, and but to me, it's quite complicated, but I think it will be good in that the student will be able to get an almost instant score.
Arkansas GED Administrator Janice Hanlon says between 7 and 9,000 Arkansans take the GED each year. The state averages an 84 to 86% pass rate. Hanlon says she's very proud of the fact that Arkansas is usually ranked in the top 10 in the country when it comes to the GED pass rate. One of the reasons success is so high is Arkansans are required to take and pass an official GED practice test through an approved adult education center or GED testing center before taking the actual exam. The Arkansas Department of Career Education has a list of 50 adult education programs located throughout the state. Hanlon says they've known for 2 or 3 years the changes were coming, and one of the things they did to prepare was teach adult education instructors about the changes prior to the official switch. Connie Cox, a GED instructor at Northwest Arkansas Community College, attended a national training session last April. She was one of three from Arkansas who attended a 3-day workshop on the GED changes in Louisville, Kentucky.
It was one of the most intense training workshops I've ever been on. It started at 8 and ended at 5. One day we didn't end till almost 8. 3 days of intensive training. You worked while you were at lunch.
Following the national workshop, a training session was held in Little Rock, and Cox says there are plans to organize more around the state this year. While in Louisville, Cox says she learned the new exam is much more intensive in math. It contains more algebraic thinking and now involves Algebra 2 skills. For writing and language arts, which was Cox's specialty at the training, she learned that writing is going to be more comprehensive. For example, the social studies and science sections will have extended response questions. She says students will still have to know the core information they needed to know previously, but teachers will have to add to the writing process and let students tie that into the other subjects. Cox says the changes will be a good thing for students, but it will be more challenging.
I think the GED has usually, from my impression, people thought, oh, I'm just going to quit school and get my GED. And it was thought of to be very easy. And they didn't really think that they were going to have to work. This is going to be challenging. It's not, I'm just going to drop out of school in the ninth grade and go get my GED. If they only have ninth grade skills, they're going to have to do a lot of work to bring their skills up to the level to pass the GED tests.
Arkansas GED Administrator Janice Hanlon says with the changes, initially, she expects to see a decrease in the number of individuals taking the new test. She says they saw a decline in people taking the GED when the exam was last changed in 2002.
People, quite frankly, were afraid to come in and take the test because they had heard it was harder and so forth. So we always see that when we change tests. But I think in the long run, we will see a positive impact because I think that the GED test will gain respect in that it is in line with what is being taught in our high schools and what students should learn. It is a document that is definitely that definitely indicates whether a person has those that knowledge and skills that they should have obtained when they were in high school. So I think it's going to be, and it will also indicate that the person can use a computer. So I think in the long run, there will be a very positive impact.
For more information about the GED test, visit GEDtestingservice.com. To find out where Arkansans can prepare for and take the GED, you can go to ace.arkansas.gov.
In about 14 minutes on Ozarks, a deep freeze of sorts takes place this week inside Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. We'll meet one of the professional skaters scheduled to glide across the stage.
We definitely need a little bit of time to get on the ice and sort of sort out our, get our bearings and just figure out exactly how much we need to push. And especially with the pair teams, setting up lifts and stuff can be, you know, a little bit tricky if it's a size that we're not used to. So we just need a little bit of time to get on and sort ourselves out.
Ice on stage at Walton Arts Center, ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, American whiskey is having a resurgence, and it's led to more experimentation.
People make quinoa whiskey. They make wheat whiskey. They make millet whiskey. Spelt is another one. Spelt whiskey is a challenging drink.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now will begin this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 91.3 FM.
For at least a decade nationally, the number of lung cancer diagnoses each year has been falling, as has mortality from lung cancer. The rates in Arkansas, however, were still climbing. In 2010, 70 per 10,000 Arkansans were diagnosed with lung cancer, compared to just 53 per every 100,000 nationally. That was until about 4 years ago. It's not the case, however, in women. The rates of lung cancer in women still are inching up. Yesterday, Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with Dr. Gary Wheeler, medical director for the Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program in Arkansas. She began by asking Dr. Wheeler why Arkansas was so behind the rest of the country.
Well, there are a couple of factors. Certainly, regionally, there's been parts of the country like Massachusetts and California who have had statewide programs to reduce the amount of tobacco use in their states for a very long time. And we have really gotten into the game late. The second issue is we're a relatively poor state, and we know that people who are on the low end of the socioeconomic curve tend to have higher rates of smoking, and that may be one of the reasons that we're seeing a higher rate of cancer in our states compared to the rest of the nation. I should mention that even though our rates are going down, we're still probably 30% higher than the rest of the country in terms of our rates of cancer mortality as well as the incidence of diagnoses. But we are seeing trends downward, as I said, finally.
You mentioned programs, programs directed toward, you know, getting people to quit smoking or not smoking. And are those things like stamp out smoking that I know I've seen commercials for?
Right. We have a cessation program, which has lots of pieces. One of which is there's lots of advertising that we do. We buy media to remind people about the dangers of smoking and direct them to our quit line. The quit line is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. If you call that number, you will be put in touch with a counselor who will do an introductory assessment, give you guidance on things that you individually may need to do to quit. Now, we do other things as well through our cessation program. We work with partners. For instance, we're starting a program with the corrections programs in Arkansas so that when people leave incarceration that they don't start back smoking. You know, you can't smoke in jail. But as soon as people get out, they tend to go back. So we're working with corrections to keep people from relapsing. We've had pregnancy programs in the state to help women who are pregnant to quit. We've had collaborative projects with mental health programs throughout the state to try to make sure that providers, when they're addressing people's other substance abuse, make sure that they include tobacco in that. And that's very successful. So there's a number of programs, but the stamp out smoking is the sort of imprimatur that we use around all these programs. So we have tried to couch the issue of quitting in terms of, you know, not only protecting yourself, but protecting your family and not being afraid to ask for help and letting people know that it takes multiple efforts before you succeed at quitting.
It's definitely not easy, that's for sure.
No, it's not.
Well, you mentioned that while it's down in general, it's still on the rise with women.
It is.
Why? Why?
Actually, we refer to that as the Virginia Slims effect. So, at you know, 50 years ago, literally this week, Luther Terry put out the first Surgeon General's report. And in that report, he linked smoking to men's cancer. But it was a few more years before the linkage to women was established. During that time, the tobacco company took a very aggressive approach to dispute the scientific information linking tobacco and cancer. And they literally say in the secret papers that were released a few years ago that their goal was to keep the American public confused about the relationship of cancer and smoking. So they developed all these new campaigns, and one of the most successful was the Virginia Slims campaign, where they put out these so-called low-tar nicotine cigarettes that were designed in a fashionable way with great advertising, and they went after women. Because up to that point, women were a relatively small market, and they exploded that market.
That was decades ago. I mean,
it was, yeah. But I mean, you have to realize that a lot of the injury that occurs with tobacco use may not manifest itself in the form of cancer for, you know, further decades. So if women were still smoking, and then, you know, and then it took a while for us as a public health entities to begin to focus on women and point out that, you know, gee whiz, you know, we're starting to see more lung cancer than we are breast cancer. There was literally a delay in addressing this issue on a gender basis. And that's been identified as one of the major effects that's led to the delay in reduction in women's cancer and new diagnoses of cancer.
Well, and it's never too late to quit if you are a smoker.
It's never too late. We estimate that about 5,000 people a year in Arkansas die from some tobacco-related cause. Sometimes it's related to heart disease. Sometimes it's from emphysema. Sometimes it's from cancer. Sometimes it's from infection, because smoking, breathing in secondhand smoke or smoking doubles your risk of virtually all infections. Sometimes it's from SIDS. So there are many, many ways that tobacco harms health, and that cumulative effect results in about 5,000 people a year in Arkansas who die from smoking, and about 500 who die from secondhand smoke. So it's absolutely imperative if you want to take care of yourself. The most important first step would be to eliminate tobacco from your lifestyle.
Well, and what about for those that are maybe thinking of starting to smoke, maybe a young person that thinks it's cool or just don't do it?
Yeah, I hate to use the, you know, just say no message. There's a lot of things that draw young people to smoke. If you pick up a Sports Illustrated, there's going to be all sorts of ads that are targeted at young people. If you walk by a service station, there's going to be lots of billboards and banners and everything else, again, using things that target young people. The flavorings that are put in chew tobacco, you just have to be aware that there's a huge industry out there who does nothing except make products that harm people. They want customers. And when people die, they go after young people. because young people are customers that they can potentially keep all of their lives until those customers die. So they are really going after young people, and I think most young people don't realize that they're targets. And I think that's one of the most important tools, is just alerting them that there's, you know, the tobacco pusher man out there waiting to seduce them and entice them into smoke.
Well, and e-cigarettes, those are pretty popular these days.
You know, e-cigarettes are a big concern. They are a nicotine-containing product. The cigarette itself is a drug delivery device. There is all the harm from e-cigarettes that you would get from regular cigarettes that contain nicotine in terms of the addiction potential and the impact of nicotine on cardiovascular function. So a lot of the heart disease, hypertension, and stuff we presume may be present with e-cigarettes when they're used on a regular basis. You know, it's a brand new product. We haven't yet collected all the scientific information that we need to know about the vapor that's released as well as the vapor that's inhaled. We know that there are new compounds that we've never heard of before. We don't know what the long-term effects of exposure to those will be. So from my point of view, e-cigarettes are made by the same companies that have been killing us with other tobacco products. I have no reason to trust them at all about the safety of their products. My presumption is that, you know, it will take many, many years before anybody will convince me that they're safe. And in the meantime, I would discourage everyone from trying these products.
Thank you, Dr. Wheeler. I had been curious as to, you know, a medical opinion on e-cigarettes, because they're kind of everywhere right now. So
there will be new information from the FDA within the next couple of months. I think they're in the process of putting together some formal federal statements on e-cigarettes.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with Dr. Gary Wheeler with Arkansas's Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program. To find out more about their programs, you can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, or you can ask your doctor about ways to quit.
It is Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
That 2014 is rolling trippingly off your tongue. Well done.
Well, we're a couple of weeks in.
Yeah. When are you going to catch up? Because I'm still in November.
I don't even know where I am.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll tell you, it's mid-January, too. Okay.
Why is he so mean to us?
Why are you mean?
I don't know.
Okay, moving on.
Yes.
We've learned a lot of new things in the last few months about Alfred Stieglitz and Georgia O'Keeffe.
Courtesy of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Not everyone might have even known his name, although most everyone knows Georgia O'Keeffe's name. But there is still a great deal to be said and studied about the Stieglitz collection, which he collected, she kind of curated after his death because she divided it up, mm-hmm. and gave about 100 pieces to Fisk University in Nashville. Well, now those are at Crystal Bridges through a joint ownership program. And we're talking about Stieglitz this week because they have an international symposium, invitation only, to talk about the two artists going on right now.
As we speak.
But if you want to learn more about the two artists and listen to these scholars, there's a program at 6:30 tomorrow night at Crystal Bridges. It's free, but tickets are required, and it is called Stieglitz Scholars Night. Mm. So they are going to tell you what they have learned. You can find out more at 418-5700 or go to crystalbridges.org, and you can sign up there.
Thank you very much, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This weekend, the stage inside Walton Art Center on Dixon Street in Fayetteville will be frozen. regardless of the temperatures outside. The production Broadway on Ice will open Friday night and then have additional performances Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and Sunday afternoon. This morning, one of the featured skaters in the show, Elizabeth Putnam, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. She's a two-time Canadian pairs bronze medalist and Canadian junior ladies bronze medalist. She says this part of her career allows her to do things on the ice she couldn't do when she was in competitive skating.
That's sort of the biggest difference between competitive skating and professional skating, is that in competitive skating we have restrictions and we have a lot of requirements that we have to meet in a certain particular amount of time. And in professional skating you get to really play around with music and style and tricks. Even there's a lot of things that we can't do in competitive skating. They're considered illegal elements.
Ooh, so give me a hint of what's an illegal element.
There's one particular trick where the pair boy would be holding the girl by her ankle and then swinging her around while also bouncing her up and down, so her head gets really close to the ice.
Have you taken part in that?
Yes, that's one of my favorite elements today.
Why do you like that? That sounds like something that should still be illegal all across the board.
I have a lot of trust in my skating partner, and which is very important. But it's fun. It's exhilarating. You get such a reaction from the crowd, which is such a great feeling, and it's fun.
Okay, how do you decide? Okay, we'd like to do that, and then the first ever time. I mean, obviously, you don't just pick up your partner by the ankles and start twirling the first time, right? You have to work up toward it?
Yeah, there is a bit of a process. It's really important for the boy to know what he's doing because he's the one sort of in control of the element. So the girl just needs to sort of stay strong. But you just start off doing it really slowly. I wore a helmet for the first few times just for precautionary. But yeah, we just start off doing it really slow. And then as you build confidence, you kind of make it bigger and bigger and push it as far as you can.
Okay. All right. When did you first put on a pair of skates?
When I was 4 years old. Yeah.
And when did it grab you instantly?
I think it did. I, as a child, I did a lot of different activities. I did gymnastics and ballet and swimming, music. My parents sort of had me involved in a little bit of everything to see what I'd like. And for whatever reason, skating was always the first thing. They could never get me off the ice. Like, you see so many kids, like, how many more minutes are left? And they want to get off and they're not having fun. And I was the complete opposite. I was just, they couldn't get me off the ice. And I really loved it from a really young age. And I would say by the age of probably 10, I was really hooked and like going 5 times a week. So,
and that's what you have to do to get to the level of competitive skating where you're medaling for your country, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. It starts from a really, really young age. Commitment from really the age of like 10. And you rarely hear of people starting to skate sort of beyond those years. You really have to start young and be doing it, you know, being dedicated like that from a really young age.
Do you then begin to know your competitors from 10 through your teen years?
Yeah, actually, with the Broadway on Ice cast, there's another girl in the cast who we've known since we were little kids, and we used to compete against each other way back in the day in Vancouver. And yeah, you start. It's a very small community. So
what's that like? Let's talk about the competition, because it's not like a certain sport where you're facing each other at the same time and one is trying to defend a goal or something like that. But you do want to be better than the other person. So do any of those competitive sort of juices, I mean, then if you're in a show together?
I think we become really good at separating that. You know, we have to do our job on the ice and everyone's doing their best and everyone's sort of going after the same goal. But on any given day, it can go one of two ways. So I think it's a world that growing up in a competitive sport, you do start to learn how to go out and do what you need to do on the ice. And then it's time to have fun after, get along with everybody, or if you are doing shows. I mean, we often spend so much of our time together, too. When you're at the rink training all day long, like all through summer, all through everything after school, you train with these people. You end up competing against a lot of the people that you're training with and stuff. So you do have a relationship with them, and you sort of learned how to make it a healthy, competitive relationship.
Now, in the show that we see at Walton Arts Center this week, you have the same partner throughout, right?
Yes.
Jonathan.
Yeah. Jonathan Poitras.
Poitras. And you actually, did you not work together in a previous engagement on a ship?
Yes. We've been working on the cruise ships together for about 3 years. This is actually our first sort of land and theater gig, so we're pretty excited.
So that's where that trust develops. If you've been working for 3 to 4 years together,
yeah,
you probably know each other's very subtle movements and things like that.
Yeah, it really becomes, it's an incredible feeling when you have a skating partner and you've really synced together and really gelled together, and that trust is just there, and it feels really nice to be out there with somebody.
Doesn't happen with every partner?
No, I would say it's pretty difficult to find the right match. I often compare it to, like, you know, really like finding a partner in life as well. You know, you can't just expect to go out and find somebody like on, you know, the first try kind of thing. It's like you have to be able to work well together. You have to be able to go through disappointment and, you know, the highs and the lows, and the trust is the biggest thing, and having confidence in someone. So it's actually not to mention physically, you know, you need to match in size and all those things. So there's a lot of things that go into it, a lot of factors that really bring a good pair team together. So it's we got really lucky. We were actually placed together through our production company who's putting on the show. Jonathan was looking for someone, and they had me in mind and put us together, and things came together really quickly for us. So we were really lucky.
What will we see when we're sitting at Walton Arts Center? What are we going to see? Because you don't think Walton Arts Center ice skating often together.
No.
Often, ever.
Yeah, it's really incredible. They basically freeze the stage. It's real ice. It's a theater, but it's ice skating. It's incredible. It's a really cool experience because you get to see everything so up close, and it's a completely different environment than an arena. It's much more intimate, and it's really worth seeing.
Is the ice – okay, you say freeze the stage. I don't know actually what that means other than there's ice on the stage. Is the ice that you have in a venue different than the ice you would have in a rink?
Yeah, it would be a little bit different. Like arena ice, the ice on the cruise ships, the ice in the theater, it's all a little bit different. But at the end of the day, it's frozen water. So,
so that doesn't – I mean, you don't have to skate differently because
– mostly we have to be more concerned about the size. The ice itself is we can easily adjust to that. The size of the rink, the dimensions of the rink can be a little bit tricky. We have to sort of, because we get really used to skating on a certain size. So when we're setting a solo or choreography, we know exactly how much we need to push and how much speed we need and how many steps it takes to get around the corner and whatnot. So when we go to a venue and the size is a little bit different, it can kind of throw us off
a little bit. Unlike a basketball court or a tennis court, the dimension will be different, so you have to take that first run.
Yeah, through. Yeah. We definitely need a little bit of time to get on the ice and sort of get our bearings and just figure out exactly how much we need to push, and especially with the pair teams, setting up lifts and stuff can be, you know, a little bit tricky if it's a size that we're not used to. So we just need a little bit of time to get on and sort ourselves out.
Well, you say to an actor, break a leg. What do you? I'm assuming you don't say that to a skater. Is there any traditional good luck?
Just good luck.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Well, all week at Walton Arts Center, have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you. Elizabeth Putnam will perform as part of Broadway on Ice 4 times this weekend at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The first performance is Friday night. Additional performances are Saturday and Sunday afternoons, as well as Saturday night. She is a 2-time Canadian Pairs Bronze Medalist and Canadian Junior Ladies Bronze Medalist. You can learn more about the performances at waltonartcenter.org. She talked to me this morning inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at KUAF.
For the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Rachel Silva with Arkansas's Historic Places. Located in the Ouachita National Forest, about 30 miles west of Little Rock and 10 miles south of Perryville, Camp Ouachita is the last remaining Works Progress Administration-built Girl Scout camp in the United States. Constructed between 1936 and 1940 for the Little Rock Girl Scout Council, Camp Ouachita was situated on the north side of Lake Sylvia. The rustic-style camp structures were laid out according to the unit plan, with 5 distinct clusters of buildings, including an administration unit and 4 camping units. Girl Scouts at Camp Ouachita engaged in activities like hiking, swimming, and canoeing. The Girl Scouts have not used the camp since 1978. The Camp Ouachita Girl Scout Camp Historic District was listed in the National Register of Historic Places in 1992. Learn more about Arkansas's historic places at arkansaspreservation.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last month's mix of snow, ice, and cold continues to affect some scheduling matters in our area. The Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas had to scrap the annual Jingle Mingle because of the bad weather, but they'll celebrate later this month with a Cajun Jamboree at the Pratt Place Barn in Fayetteville. Proceeds go toward the 2014 Scholarship Fund. The event is scheduled for Saturday, January 25th at 6:30. Music will be provided by Snake Eyes and the Bug Band. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased online at spsfnwa.org.
Area blood agencies are still trying to recover from lost opportunities to collect blood because of the weather. There is a blood drive tomorrow on the eastern side of our listening area. North Arkansas Regional Medical Center on Main Street in Harrison will sponsor the blood drive from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. tomorrow. If you're healthy, 17 or older, and weigh 110 pounds or more, you may be eligible to give blood.
If you relish the arrival of winter, Hobbs State Park in Benton County has a day lined up for you Saturday. Beginning at 9 and lasting through the afternoon, Hobbs Park will host activities like a bird observation station, hikes, and lectures on topics like eagles, raptors, and pelts. Almost every event is free except the afternoon eagle cruise, and most of the events take place inside the Hobbs State Park Visitor Center on Highway 12, located just east of the Highway 12 War Eagle Road intersection. For more information, you can call 798-5000.
For music fans, January is an exciting time when festivals begin to announce their lineups for spring and summer. Wakarusa officials make their final lineup announcement Thursday. A bit further away, the organizers of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival do the same later today. The lineup for the OK Mozart Festival in Bartlesville will be announced this month at a launch party in the Bartlesville Community Center. It's the 30th year for the music festival that brings classical, jazz, and folk musicians together. The lineup will be announced Thursday, January 23rd from 5:30 until 9 p.m. Past guests have included Yitzhak Perlman, Joshua Bell, the Turtle Island String Quartet, and the Canadian Brass. You can learn more about the festival at okmozart.com.
Events connected to observing Martin Luther King Jr. Day continue this week in Fort Smith. Saturday, an awards and recognition banquet, including scholarships for area college students, is planned for 7 p.m. in the Reynolds Room at the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center. Individual tickets are $30 and are available at 479-379-7904. And they're also available at the UAFS box office in the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center. And on Monday, the actual holiday, there will be a 7:30 a.m. breakfast in the Smith Pendergraft Campus Center at UAFS. It's free and open to the public. A full morning of activities is slated, including educational sessions provided by faculty and representatives from the MLK Community Association. A symbolic march reminiscent of the freedom marches of the 1960s will begin at approximately 9:45 a.m. and move from the campus center to the Reynolds Tower, while the Carillion plays We Shall Overcome. A brief ceremony will be held at the tower.
Finally, a few sports notes. The Arkansas men's basketball team hosts Kentucky tonight in Bud Walton Arena at 8. The University of Arkansas men's track and field team debuted at number 1 in the 2014 preseason rankings, as announced by the United States Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association yesterday. The Razorbacks are the defending NCAA indoor champions, winning their first championship under head coach Chris Bucknum. Meanwhile, the women's track and field team at Arkansas opens the season ranked 7th nationally. This is Ozarks at Large.
I've been in love with love and the idea of something binding.
Last week, the band The Mowglies was one of several groups Wakarusa organizers officially added to this year's lineup. Having seen this adorable Los Angeles-based eight-piece band at two music festivals, I can assure you they're a perfect fit for Wakarusa. At Tulsa's inaugural Center of the Universe Festival last summer, the band had an early evening set that was devoid of fans in the oversized VIP section. To get closer to the general admission fans who had shown up, the band graciously came down to meet them and performed part of their set acoustically. Later that evening, they gathered outside at a downtown landmark and performed another unplugged set. Surrounded by a small circle of fans, the group sang, danced, and used a guitar case for percussion. The Mowglies started in a garage in California's San Fernando Valley, where many of them grew up. The Mowglies consists of five childhood friends from Southern California and three Midwestern transplants. The group's website describes the band's music as rock, alternative, and whatever feels good. The Mowglies' most recent album, Waiting for the Dawn, was released last June on the Island Def Jam label. One of the themes of the 13-track album is definitely love, a word that appears in the lyrics of the majority of the songs, and even in the title of the track, Love is Easy. We will never know. This upbeat, feel-good song is a great representation of the type of music created by the Mowglies on this album. The combination of cheery music and repetitious lyrics makes their songs incredibly catchy. One track that's definitely been stuck in my head at one time or another is Say It, Just Say It. The catchy songs and energy the band brings to live performances makes you want to dance and sing along, which anyone can do. If you don't know the lyrics, don't worry. Group members take the time to instruct the audience on some of their songs so fans can participate in their fun. While the Mowglies is a fun group of musicians, there are a few calmer songs on the album. For example, the record's final track, We Are Free, has a slower pace than the other songs on the album, but at 6 minutes and 31 seconds, it gets a little long, and it contains too much jamming for my tastes. One track on the album I do enjoy is titled Time. The song showcases a guitar and one vocalist, save for twice in the song when he mentions harmony and the rest of the band responds. I don't like time, and time is making me old, but I'm doing all right, 'cause I will still be young tomorrow. And I can't stand working all day, work is wearing out my soul. I think I'll go out tonight, and I will call in sick tomorrow. The song addresses not wanting to grow up and resolving to live the way you want. This youthfulness is another theme seen throughout the album. While you wouldn't know it from this song, the band's arsenal of instruments ranges from tambourine to bass to keys to melodica to hand claps. What you also wouldn't learn from this song is how well the band's voices work together. In Hi, Hey There, Hello, the back and forth between one male and one female vocalist creates a charming song of courtship. Love will take you out. I've got two nickels to my name. Oh, hey, my story sounds the same, but I'll find some way to show you what life's all about. Well, we could take a walk downtown. Oh, let's search for higher ground. Count the stars and clouds and howl at the moon. I hear the rich folk come here too, 'cause
it's such a lovely view, and when the sun decides to rise, it'll be too soon.
Waiting for the Dawn by the Mowglis features several upbeat, catchy songs that discuss love and are often full of hope and, of course, the notion of having a good time. With their incredibly danceable style of music and their energetic and adorable stage presence that isn't best captured on a produced album, the Mowglis is a great addition to this year's Wakarusa lineup. While this album is a good representation of the Mowglis, the group is best experienced live, which you can do at this year's Wakarusa Music Festival. The event is scheduled for June 5th through the 8th near Ozark on Mulberry Mountain. More information is available at wakarusa.com. For more information on Waiting for the Dawn or the band, you can visit themowglis.net.
Beethoven's Ninth Symphony has been the soundtrack for protests from China to Chile.
These women, of all the songs that they would choose, the translation of the Ode to Joy in Spanish was the song that they ended up singing in front of these torture prisons.
Following the Ninth, a documentary about the power of music. Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen later today from 3 to 6 p.m. to KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Boonville.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Talked to one of the ice skaters involved in the Broadway and Ice at Walton Arts Center later this week. You saw her skate just for a bit at Jones Center, didn't you?
I did. On Sunday afternoon, there was a quick little exhibition of what they will be doing, and her partner skated for a little bit, and it was fun to watch. I'd never actually seen, I guess, live ice skating. I always grew up watching it on TV, of course, but...
Yeah, now that you mention it, I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see it in person.
Professional,
right. Yeah, no, I think it'll be a good time. I was impressed in how they were able to stay in a small area because you obviously aren't going to have that whole rink on the Walton Arts Center stage. So I was curious to see. And looks like they've got it mapped out. I mean, of course, they're professionals. They know what they're doing. It was interesting to see them limited to a certain space.
Right. Let's see. I watched the first episode of True Detective on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's written by someone who earned his MFA at the University of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. There was a nice little nod to Fayetteville, the U of A, in that first episode. A fictional character that's mentioned just briefly was named Skip Hayes,
mm-hmm.
who used to be, of course, on the creative writing faculty here.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So,
Very cool. And I think if you want to know a little bit more about him, Katie Hendrickson wrote about him on our blog. So that's at KUAF.com/mixdown.
We'll end today's show with some music from the Jackie Myers Jazz Trio. That's the Texas-based band that will be playing at the OK Mozart launch party that takes place January 23rd in downtown Bartlesville, Oklahoma. This is the song Big Bad Things. You can find out more about the band at JackieMyersBand.com. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grada.
Thanks for listening.
I'm using him. She's using